Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're also joined today by WMQM AM 1600, our new 50,000-watt affiliation in Memphis, Tennessee. And our guest at 9 a.m. is Elizabeth De La Vega. She is a former federal prosecutor. If you're not familiar with her work, you can go to Tom Englehart's website at tomdispatch.com. And discover a piece entitled Lying and Spying, How the Administration Slip-Slides Away. Elizabeth De La Vega has written a powerful new book entitled The United States versus George W. Bush et al. And it gets into the whole issue of state spying on American citizens and the way in which, according to Elizabeth, the latest administration maneuvers to slip-slide past any congressional or judicial oversight of or responsibility for an illegal program to spy on Americans is something that all of us need to be aware of. Elizabeth, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. You know, this whole business of state spying on American citizens, I, of course, remember back in the 1960s when some of these revelations were beginning to occur about the FBI's COINTELPRO program and some of the things going on that were directed against anti-war protesters in the Vietnam era, and then, of course, the revelations later about the Kennedy and LBJ wiretaps on King and so forth. Now it seems to me in a whole new era where in the post 9/11 world, reading about this USA Patriot Act 1 and 2 and the Military Commissions Act of 2006 and these NSA warrantless spying programs that were revealed in the establishment press in the last year or so, seem to suggest that we're going into a whole new era of illegal surveillance operations on American citizens. Is that a fair take?
It does seem like a fair take. And what is really distressing to me about the actions of the Bush administration and really the attitude of the Bush administration is that, at least in the past, this isn't really saying too much, but it seems like the previous administrations knew and understood what they were doing was wrong and against the law, but this administration seems to just blatantly declare itself justified in violating the law. And so the bar has been lowered to a point where really there almost aren't any standards anymore.
Well, of course, you're a former federal prosecutor, and I think it's important to emphasize that you are a prosecutor. Isn't it an incredible exaggeration, if not a complete distortion of the truth, on the part of the present administration to say that we have needed all of these new surveillance acts and so forth because we simply have not been able to monitor these so-called terrorists and criminals before? I mean, I go back to the late 70s when, after all of the revelations about CIA misconduct, the Congress created the so-called Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, where a federal court, as I understand it, was set up, a secret federal court comprised of a group of federal judges that was to review requests coming from the executive branch and coming from the American intelligence community for all kinds of extraordinary surveillance projects, whereby the court would have to review certain things that otherwise would be considered to be a violation of the law and would have to evaluate whether or not the case presented by the president or by the FBI or the CIA warranted giving them an authorization to do something that otherwise would be illegal and dubious. When we come back, I want to ask you about the FISA court and why the Bush administration believes that it's not had any recourse under that court to do what it's doing anyway.
Okay.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're with Elizabeth De La Vega in these next 30 minutes. Stay tuned.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Obviously, something serious is going on, politically, economically, geologically, and environmentally. And how you prepare for those changes will determine your well-being in the very near future. Now, whether you're preparing for your family, your business, or your country, the Survival Center has the knowledge and experience to assist you in those decisions. Survival Center is America's premier supplier of family preparedness, health, and survival supplies with over 33 years of continuous operation. Now, you can start preparing with just knowledge, and that's why the Survival Center is offering a book. It's called Basic Preparedness, and it's just $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And it'll teach you about the four basics of survival: food, water, medical, and shelter. And when you order that book, you'll also get a free Survival Center catalog. Contact us today so we can help you prepare for whatever comes your way. Call us toll-free at 1-800-321-2900 or online at www.survivalcenter.com.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going there right now.
Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our guest in this half hour of the show is Elizabeth de la Vega, a former federal prosecutor, author of the new book, United States versus George W. Bush et al. And Elizabeth has been talking about this whole issue of state spying on American citizens and the way in which, under the Bush administration in the last 5 years, this whole thing has been ratcheted up to an entirely new level. And Elizabeth, getting back to this Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Agency court that was set up in the late 1970s, which basically said that if the president or if the intelligence community wanted to spy on an American citizen and to do something that was normally considered to be against the law, they had to go to this federal court to get authorization. And as I understand it from talking with my brother about this, in the vast majority of instances, the court granted the requests for these extraordinary intelligence operations. The other thing is that it even permitted the operation to go ahead without the court order, and then they had 72 hours after doing something to inform the court just to make sure that it was okay. But it provided, as near as I can tell, the widest possible parameters for the president and for the intelligence agencies. So why does Bush suddenly feel that he needs all of these new intelligence powers that seem to completely ignore the FISA court?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure if it's over the last 5 years or over the last 3 years, but the administration filed 19,000 applications under this FISA law, and only four were rejected.
Out of 19,000?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's onerous, you can see. So, yes, it's not a hard standard to meet. And the law, as you said, was enacted to make it much easier to get information when there was a foreign intelligence purpose. So the procedure in and of itself is much easier to follow than the one that's required for a regular search warrant. And the law itself allows for 72-hour emergency monitoring. And if it is a time of war, although that we don't have a declared war right now,
right.
If it were, it would be 15 days. So the procedure takes into account the need for emergency. So none of the administration's justifications for doing this without going through the court are valid. And I can tell your listeners that at the time of 9/11, I was in charge of the office in San Jose, California, and at the U.S. Attorney's Office, and we didn't do FISA warrants because that goes through a special court and so forth, but we did have to do hundreds, literally hundreds of warrants for emails because San Jose is the area where there are all the IS internet service providers. There are about, not all of them, but there are over 30 of them. So people around the country, from offices around the country, called our office, and we had to do all these applications. But we did it. We only had 11 people in the office. And we just worked, and we did the paperwork that was necessary and went to the court and applied. And if we got the application, we did it, or you know, they were able to get their authorization. So the idea that the offices of the United States don't have the resources to complete this paperwork and the amount of time that's necessary is just completely false. And I don't think that was really ever a justification for the administration. I think they just decided on their own that they were going to circumvent the procedures like they have with so many other things along the way here.
Well, you're a former federal prosecutor. In your judgment, are we talking about a situation where high crimes and misdemeanors have been committed here?
Well, I think that there are numerous instances where the administration has committed high crimes and misdemeanors. First of all, the definition of that, it doesn't have to be a violation of a statute. It has to be something that goes to violating the it has to be an abuse of government power. And clearly this would be both a violation of a statute, because the FISA law specifically says it's a crime to do this type of surveillance without following the procedures, but it's also an abuse of power. And as I lay out in my book isn't about illegal spying at all. It's about the pre-war intelligence. But that is another instance where we have both a statutory violation in defrauding the United States as well as an abuse of power in providing false information to Congress and so forth. So, and those are just two. There are others as well, of course.
Well, you know, to me, as I look at this, I, of course, am a part of the non-Bush, anti-Bush, as it were, a populist American right, which presumably takes the American Constitution seriously.
Right.
And when we start talking about warrantless surveillance programs and the so-called program of extraordinary renditions on the part of the CIA abroad, kidnapping people and subcontracting torture out to foreign allies and so forth,
mm-hmm.
And when we speak about falsified intelligence that led to an American preemptive military attack on a foreign country, and all of this, of course, has been reinforced by the recent revelations and public statements about what Douglas Feith has been up to or was mm-hmm. up to at that time, among others, isn't this something that the average member of the American public, be he or she a liberal or a conservative or a centrist? I mean, aren't we saying that the American public, regardless of political ideology, should be terrified by the composite picture that seems to be emerging from all of this?
Well, yes, absolutely, because in the last 5 years, under the guise of a war that's not a war, because the war that the administration claims they're acting under is not the war in Iraq. It's not the invasion of Iraq. It's this global war on terror, which isn't a war at all. And neither is the war in Iraq either. I mean, it's clearly hostilities on a horrible ongoing basis, but it's not a declared war.
Right.
But under the guise of this global war on terror, which is really a fiction, because it could never end, according to the way the administration defines it, they have arrogated power unto themselves. And the question in my mind is, if we let them do this, what would another president do? Because conceivably somebody could be even worse than this. And if the populace just decides to let this go, I think we've created a precedent that leads us down to a dangerous slope, and I really don't know where it would end.
It would seem to me that the logical conclusion would be that we either are or will be shortly a police state if this whole trend continues, and it begs the question, where is the Congress and where is the media on this?
Absolutely. I actually can't understand it at all, because this is so far beyond anything really anyone could imagine, and I guess we all have to ask ourselves, is this okay? Is this okay for the executive branch to decide to take it upon itself to kidnap people and send them to countries where we know they're going to be tortured? And is it okay for them to say that we're going to detain people, citizens or not, in this country for 2.5 years, like Jose Padilla, and not even let them talk to a lawyer? And as somebody who worked for the Department of Justice for all those years, it's almost painful for me to hear all this stuff, because when you do that kind of work, it's very important and it's really critical to follow these laws, because if the executive branch doesn't follow the laws, how can it enforce the laws against other people? You know, the bedrock principle of this country is that no person is above the law, and we are to treat the humblest of citizens the same as we treat the most powerful of citizens. And if we don't do that, we really have no credibility and no place in trying to enforce laws against anyone.
Yeah, and it seems to me that as we examine this whole thing, with all of the technologies that exist that were not available even 20 years ago in regard to surveillance of every conceivable type, it seems to me that as you examine this whole question, just in terms of what we know, mm-hmm. what has come out in the media in regard to USA Patriot Acts 1 and 2 and the NSA surveillance program and the Military Commissions Act of 2006 and so forth, it makes me wonder in regard to some of Bush and Cheney's activities and the activities of an American intelligence community that presumably does whatever these guys say, what else is out there that has not been exposed, that has not been discussed at all in the media, that suggests that there may be 2 or 5 or 10, or God only knows, 100 other programs of this type transpiring that have not been yet detected by anyone on Capitol Hill or an honest independent journalist that's trying to look into this sort of thing?
Well, right. Well, we actually have no idea what they're doing. And
yes.
One thing, the thing I wrote about in the article that you mentioned, the lying and spying, is that We know really beyond a reasonable doubt that this administration does not act in good faith when it purports to deal with Congress. In the FISA situation, we spent... Oh, you want to come back?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll be back with Elizabeth De La Vega, the author of Lying and Spying, How the Administration Slips, Slides Away, former federal prosecutor. She also has a new book out, United States versus George W. Bush et al. We'll be back with Mark Dankos, America, live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
Back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined in this half-hour segment by former federal prosecutor Elizabeth De La Vega, the author of the powerful new book, United States versus George W. Bush et al., who also has a piece at Tom Englehart's Tom Dispatch entitled Lying and Spying, How the Administration Slip-Slides Away. I will make sure that information on these articles and her book make their way to Breaking All the Rules News summary of the Republic Broadcasting Network show for today. And at some point, information on her articles and book will be in the RBN archives as well. Elizabeth, where do we stand at this point in all of this? It seems to me that we're in a brave new world where if we become involved in a preemptive war with Iran, that that probably would lead to even more domestic repression at home, wouldn't it?
That's what I'm afraid of. The parallels between what the administration is doing and saying right now with regard to Iran and what they did with regard to Iraq are absolutely chilling. And when I wrote the book, I was aware before I wrote the book that we had gone a long way towards attacking Iraq before they even started talking about having a quote-unquote open dialogue about it, but I really didn't know how far they had gone, and they had been attacking Iraq for months, and in fact, Donald Rumsfeld had approved over 50 airstrikes that were likely to kill 30 or more civilians before the president even started saying he was going to talk to the people about it. And it's really the same thing here. We already have ships over there, and it looks very clear that they're trying to think up some kind of pretext for a war. And I think there are several reasons for it. One is that they've always wanted to do this. The man who's the chief aide to Vice President Cheney on Middle East is named David Wormser. He's been publicly, in conservative circles at least, or neoconservative circles, advocating invasion of Iraq, Iran, Syria, Libya since 1996.
And he's considered by many people who work for this network as an Israeli intelligence asset.
Well, I don't know about that, but he's definitely closely aligned with Israel. There's no question about that. And I think they're trying to also create a distraction from how bad it is in Iraq for the American people and to make people, again, susceptible and agreeable, I guess, to these abuses of power on their own behalf. And I'm sure your listeners know that Vice President Cheney in particular has been concerned about what he perceived to be a time period. So it's just a perfect storm of really horrible conditions that seems to be very conducive to them trying to do yet more things. It's really very scary. And one thing about it is that up until at least fairly recently, as it relates to the mainstream media, the people such as you or anybody who sounds the alarm about the actions of the Bush administration has been the side that's kind of been attacked or viewed as being a little off the wall. But the truth is the administration is radical. They have radical ideas. They're totally contrary to our 250 years of our Constitution.
Yes, and to me, and this is a subject that has come up from time to time on my show, Dr. Chalmers Johnson was on last mm-hmm. week, who was a consultant for the CIA years ago, and he's been a right. tenured professor at the University of California for about 30 years. He's an East Asian scholar, and he's written a new book entitled Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic. And Johnson was making this point last week that we are talking about an entirely new realm of illegal activities, both abroad as well as in this country, that are completely outside of the purview and scope of the United States Constitution. Mm-hmm. And as I listen to him speak, it seems to me that there are a growing a body of people in this country across the political spectrum that are starting to look at this stuff as it relates to this what appears to be a new military adventure with Iran. And they're saying, how did we get to this point? Mm-hmm. And this to me has created a crisis of confidence in our leaders and institutions that I think it just remains to be seen how it plays out.
Right, right. And the best thing is for people to just keep talking and keep talking publicly and voicing their opposition to this kind of activity, because it doesn't get better. It just seems to get worse.
With your situation, I guess you are completely out of federal service right now?
Yes.
Do you fundamentally see your role as someone who was a federal prosecutor and has a legal education and is a great writer and so forth? Is your primary orientation now simply utilizing your journalism career to try and bring the rest of us up to speed on what's happened?
Yes, and I don't consider myself to be a savior or anything, but when I did retire, I was able to spend a lot more time paying attention to mainstream media in particular, and it was obvious to me that there was kind of a hole there in terms of people with legal background to comment on these things.
Elizabeth, I hope you will make a return appearance on this show. I really sincerely mean that. I'm going to be posting information on your book and on your articles both with RBN and also with Breaking All the Rules News and with the broadcast interview source of Washington, D.C. This has been Elizabeth D. La Vega on Mark Dankos America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Thanks.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm going there right now. Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly. American Free Press. AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
This is Mark Dankos America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined in the last half hour of the show by Adam Hochschild. Adam has recently written an incredible letter to the president, which appeared as an op-ed piece in the Los Angeles Times. He's also written a piece for Tom Englehart's Radio Alert entitled The Big Push, Mired in the Trenches of the Iraq Fiasco. And he's also the award-winning author of something called King Leopold's Ghost, a story of greed, terror, and heroism in colonial Africa. And Adam Hochschild, who is a historian, is at work at a new book on World War I, which, among other things, apparently connects the president's plan to surge American troops into Baghdad with the context of what transpired prior to the 1916 Battle of the Somme, which proved to be one of history's bloodier catastrophes and a particular problem for the British Empire. How are you, Adam?
Good, and it's good to be with you, Mark.
Yes, in terms of your background as a historian and as a political scientist and one who's been watching this whole thing with Bush here in these last 4 years with the war in Iraq, where do you think that this entire thing is headed? It seems to me that, and I've talked about it before on this show, with the collapse of the British Empire in the 20th century and all of the reasons for that, which in some cases pertain to both Palestine and Mesopotamia, it seems to me that we're walking down that same road this time with the American Empire.
I think you're exactly right, Mark. You know, the British also had their try at controlling this part of the world. And like us, I think one of the major motivating factors for them was the amount of oil there. But they found that it was like stepping into a hornet's nest that's been buzzing for hundreds, perhaps thousands of years. And I think the U.S. is finding that right now. It is very difficult to come into somebody else's part of the world and try to rearrange it in the way that you would like. Even if we assume, which I don't think is the case, that the Bush people have the best of motives and that what they really want to do is install democracy in the Arab world and so forth, whether you give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that, or whether you assume, as I do, that oil is the main thing on their minds, in any case, it is extremely difficult to run an empire these days, to march into somebody else's country, try to rearrange things, set up a government, especially when it's a country that is as filled with deep-seated, long-lasting religious conflicts in the way that Iraq is. When I look at the U.S. intervention in Iraq right now, one of the things that really amazes me is this. I think it's the first time that a great power has ever had a military intervention in another country that's in the midst of a civil war where elements on both sides of that civil war are shooting at American troops. I can't think of a comparable thing that's happened in history, and it's a real mess.
Yes, and it seems to me, you know, I lived in Iran years ago.
Really?
When Shah was in power, and my dad was serving over there as a logistics advisor to the Shah's Air Force. And to me, looking at that part of the world, I began to draw some comparisons between the British problems in that part of the world and the American years later. And looking back then on this whole issue of World War One and British policy in Mesopotamia during and after World War One, it seems to me that one of the things that your work seems to hint at is the same sort of thing I got from Marty Callahan, who's a film producer who's got a film out with Third Coast Films that talks about, I think, some of the same things are probably covered in your book. But Marty was saying that at one point in the 1920s, Britain had something like a million men under force of arms in Mesopotamia and could not pull off what they were attempting to pull off in that part of the world. We're talking in this instance about American troop levels that are nowhere near that level, and yet the policy seems to be going in the same way. Aren't we talking about the imposition of an attempt of an imposition of a Western mindset, whether it's cultural, whether it's economic, or whether it's a combination of those factors? Aren't we talking about something we're trying to impose by armed force? A worldview that's simply not going to be sold in that part of the world, no matter how many people we put in there.
I think that's really true. I'm a little skeptical about that figure of a million men from Britain actually under arms. It may be counting local troops or something, but
okay.
I don't know that period of history at all. But I think you're absolutely right. It's very hard to impose one's worldview by military force on somebody else, especially a part of the world that has a long-developed culture of its own, a language which very, very, very few Americans speak, and which has a religious tradition very different from ours, and in fact a divided religious tradition. We're seeing in everyday's headlines now how incredibly deep this hostility between Shiites and Sunnis go. This was something that the U.S. seems to have made absolutely no provision for in its planning for the invasion and the takeover of Iraq. And it complicates and I think makes even more impossible the job of trying to rearrange another country and another culture in a way that the American government would want. I think that's a pretty hopeless proposition in any case, but all the more so when there are these antagonisms that go back for thousands of years.
Yes. Do you think it's possible that this dreadful situation in Iraq could wind up with Turkey, Iran, and Saudi Arabia being involved militarily in Iraq? Because I'm watching this whole issue of the Kurds in Iraq, and of course they're talking about having an independent state there, a Kurdistan. The Turks clearly don't like this idea and have intimated from time to time that maybe they would take some sort of military action against an independent Kurdish state. And then you have Saudi Arabia at least implying that maybe they might be prepared to do something in Saudi if they thought that the Sunnis were getting the short end of the stick in regard to this civil war with the Shiites. And, of course, there are all of these allegations. Hard to tell how many of them are true and how many are being fabricated in the American news media in regard to what Iran is doing on in and with and through the Shiites in the eastern part of Iran. But it seems to me that outside regional powers could become involved in this thing pretty quickly.
They could be. And, of course, there are these ancient feelings of friendship between the Shiites of Iran and Iraq, a hostility between the Sunnis and the Shiites, a hostility between the Kurds and the Arabs, Turkey's hostility to the idea of an independent Kurdish state. It's just a series of landmines, one after the other. And I think the U.S. would have been well advised not to get entangled in all of that. You know, there are parts of the world we simply cannot and should not control, and I think this is one of them. And of course, everybody there, I think, knows that the major reason the United States is so deeply involved has to do with the vast amount of oil there. Iraq has something like 10 to 12% of the world's known oil reserves, and to anybody who doubts that that's a major factor, in fact, the major factor behind the American involvement, I would pose this question. Suppose that instead of having 10 to 12% of the world's oil, Iraq had 10 to 12% of the world's reserves of turnips or kiwi fruit or potatoes. Would there be 140,000 U.S. troops there? I don't think so.
Well, maybe with the current administration there might be, but I say that facetiously. I see exactly where you're coming from. Yeah, that's a point well taken. As I kind of watch this whole thing, just since the first Tuesday in November with the changeover on Capitol Hill, it's been curious to me in recent days, including in today's Washington Post on the front page. They quote Nancy Pelosi as yesterday linking her support for Bush's war funding request to strict standards of resting, training, and equipping combat forces, a move that could curtail troop deployments and alter the course of U.S. involvement in Iraq. And going down the page, it seems to me that when you look at Harry Reid and John Murtha and Joe Biden and some of the other people that are quoted in this article, it seems, at least from my perspective, that the Democrats are grasping at straws in terms of what their policy should be as an alternative. Do you think they're going to come up with something that is a clear alternative to what Mr. Bush has committed us to since March of 2003? Or do you think ultimately they're going to be a part of the ride in this thing now?
You know, I wish I could say that I took heart from how the Democrats are acting, but they look to me very weak and divided at this point. I think they are terrified of appearing to be weak in supporting the U.S. troops there, and that as a result, none of the plans that are likely to attract majority support are going to really have much teeth in them from the Democratic Party. I'm more interested, actually, in the Republicans who are defecting from Bush, because I think if enough of them, and there are some now, like Chuck Hagel and
in Nebraska,
quite a few others,
yes,
who are very loud and clear in their feelings that the U.S. is heading for an absolute disaster there, I think if enough of them speak out, as they're starting to do, it may enable the Democrats to get over this irrational fear they have of appearing to be weak and not supporting our troops and so forth. I wish they would just be much more forthright in saying the best way to support our troops is to keep them alive by getting them out of there as fast as possible. But very few Democrats are saying that directly.
Yeah, you know, Chalmers Johnson was on this show last week, and I know you're probably familiar with him. And he used to be involved with these national intelligence estimates for the CIA back in the late 60s and early 70s. And then, of course, he's been at UC San Diego for many years. And in talking to him about his new book, Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic, he was pretty much making the case for the fact that as far as stopping this disastrous course, he felt that it boiled down to defunding and impeachment. Would you go that far in this thing?
Well, I guess I feel that impeachment is politically not a realistic thing for the Democrats to push for.
Yes.
Do I feel it's merited? Well, in some sense, yes, because I think that Bush taking us into a totally disastrous war on deliberately false pretenses far outweighs anything that Bill Clinton did with Monica Lewinsky.
No question about it.
Politically, I think it's probably not a very realistic alternative. I think the more realistic alternative that I would push for if I were a Democratic leader in Washington or one of these dissident Republicans would be to push for defunding the war and to, you know, set a firm, clear deadline. By the end of the year, the troops have to be out of there. And, you know, we're not going to vote for the military budget otherwise. I think that's the only way to accomplish this.
Yes.
And I think it's an issue also that genuinely is and should be, you know, talked about as something that cuts across the traditional liberal-conservative divide. You know, people like Chuck Hagel, they are not, you know, old-fashioned liberals on other issues by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, and it seems to me that this has caused a real reassessment on the American right, too, from the vantage point that Pat Buchanan clearly has stood out against this thing from the beginning, both on constitutional grounds as well as on the merits or the demerits of this neocon policy in that part of the world. And as I watch this whole thing taking place, it seems to me that when we start talking about an American president launching a preemptive war in the Middle East on false intelligence estimates and basing the rationale for this in something that's largely regarded at best as misguided and at worst by many people as fraudulent, and then you look at the loss of life and the fact that instead of spending $50 billion, as Wolfowitz indicated would be the case, we're now at, what, say, $400 billion and moving toward half a trillion.
Yeah.
Wall Street Journal talking about another $100 billion this year for Iraq and $145 billion next year. But as the American people see all of this stuff piling up, along with the incredible loss of life in this circumstance that will be ongoing, are we not talking about a situation where the kind of crisis of confidence on the part of our own people, where their government is concerned, is reaching a level where we're increasingly watching, I guess, what would be a process of delegitimization?
Well, I think so. I mean, you've got, you know, something like 70% of the American people at this point thinking that this war, in one sense or another, is a disaster. That's why Bush is so far down in the polls. But, you know, the figure you just quoted, Wall Street Journal predicting $145 billion for the war next year. I mean, heaven's sakes, what's going to be happening next year? Still this many troops there next year? How many deaths, American deaths, are we going to have at that point? I think it's going to, you know, if it goes on that long, it's going to start to produce the kind of demonstrations, divisions within the country and so forth that the Vietnam War did. The only reason that hasn't happened so far, I think, is that there's no draft. But pretty soon the impact on everybody's pocketbook is going to be so great that I think there'll be a much more greater public outcry than there is now.
Yeah, I would read this thing in the same way, that largely if we start talking about a situation where, let's say, with the level of borrowed money that is being utilized to finance this war, if we end up seeing a tanking action on the part of the American dollar if Asian banks that have loaned us all this money start calling in the chips, and if we see an ongoing military circumstance where these recycled troops and recycled National Guard people and so forth and Army Reserve people just wear them down to the point of absolute thinness, and if there's a return to an American draft, all of that coalesces in that fashion, I think we'll be looking at a revolt on this among the American public that probably will dwarf what happened in the 60s in Vietnam.
Well, I would hope so if it gets to that point. There's one aspect of things that I take some heart from, which is that, I was speaking a moment ago about oil. I think there's been something of a sea change in the last 6 or 8 months in this country among the American business establishment, waking up to the dangers of relying this much on imported oil, also simultaneously and very closely interwoven with that is the waking up to the dangers of global warming. I see American corporate leaders speaking out about these things much more than they used to, and I hope that'll have some effect on feelings about the war.
We'll be back with Adam Hochschild. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, WristEase.com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're in the final minutes of our conversation with Adam Hochschild, who has a great letter to the president at in the L.A. Times. I'm going to post that later at Breaking All the Rules News, as well as in the RBN archives when those come back up. Also, Tom Englehart has Adam Hochschild's article, The Big Push, Mired in the Trenches of the Iraq Fiasco. I'll make sure that that appears at Breaking All the Rules News, as well as in the RBN radio archives on the show when those finally get posted. Adam is the author of King Leopold's Ghost, A Story of Greed, Terror, and Heroism in Colonial Africa. And then, sir, when is your new book on World War I going to be out?
Oh, unfortunately not for about 3 or 4 years. I'm only halfway through a very, very rough first draft, so I have a lot of work left to do on it.
Well, but that's a testimony to the kind of scholarship involved. At a much lower level of scholarship, I'm trying to finish a postgraduate thesis on the Council of Trent. And have some level of awareness as to when you get into a project like that, what clearly becomes involved in the whole situation. And I would imagine that 3 or 4 years from now, we're going to be looking at that book and finding ourselves historically enlightened to the extent to which the insights from that book are going to shed some light on what's happening to this country and to this empire.
Well, I hope so, but the book is going to be mainly about that period, but I'd be delighted if readers drew some parallels between things that are happening today, because I see quite a few of them.
I'll ask you for one political prediction with your crystal ball. Do you think we will be at war with Iran?
You know, I think my prediction would be that President Bush is too frightened at this point of the domestic political reaction if he waged the sort of all-out war that I think people in the administration wanted very much to wage a few years ago, where they would go in and, you know, bomb 40 sites or something to eliminate every possible vestige of the Iranian nuclear program. I wouldn't be surprised, unfortunately, though, if he didn't do one symbolic thing, because I think he's an angry man in an angry mood right now, feeling enormously frustrated with how his war in Iraq has come out. And, you know, maybe they'll go bomb or send a guided missile or something to hit a factory that they claim is making these roadside bombs that are being used in Iraq, something like that, so he feels he's done something. He's an angry man, unpredictable, and there are very few people around him who are sort of restraining him, and that worries me a lot.
Yes, and it'll also be interesting to see to me how this plays with the Republican Party in coming years, whether people like Chuck Hagel begin to have more influence in regard to this internationalist interventionist foreign policy, or whether the neocons who have had such sway with Bush continue to rule the roost in the Republican Party.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a real battle for the soul of the Republican Party between the neocons and between the old-fashioned conservatives who felt that it was not our business to meddle in other parts of the world to this degree.
Adam Hochschild, thank you very much for being on Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back on Monday with Will Grigg. See you then. God bless. Bye-bye. Over time.